Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 16, Episode 8. This week, Bob sat down with Raylene Baker to discuss her role as the doula program manager at the Ostara Initiative. This was a fascinating conversation about a cause and service that I didn't even know existed. We are sans Janet today, but Bob and I are here to dive into your listener questions. But before we get into that, Bob, I hear we have some West Memphis 3 news and some news on Jody's case.
Yeah, things are going that I've been kind of hinting at some stuff from the West Memphis 3, but seems like other people haven't followed all the rules. So I'm not going to, because we were kind of keeping things quiet until everything's out there. There's still some information that hasn't come out yet. But as I've mentioned before, that we do have DNA testing is moving forward. Fingers crossed. We're still waiting for like the signed order from the judge to officially make it happen. But we have both Damien and Jason's attorneys have worked on it and come to an agreement with the district attorney to do DNA testing. And it was actually supposed to go out and be back already, but there was some scheduling conflicts. So okay. It looks like as of right now, from what Damien told me the other day, or Lori did, his wife, it's looking like February 25th is when everything should be like shipped out for testing. So it's just super exciting. It's kind of surreal,
yeah,
to think about the fact that this case could finally actually be solved. And there's even more news than that, but that I'm not going to share.
What do we think a typical turnaround time is for DNA testing?
They made it sound like they're kind of putting a rush on it, and it could be like within a month.
Wow.
So like by the end of March, if things stay, you know, again, it was supposed to go out, I'd say last week or the week before.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying like we should have results by February. So now it's February 25th is when it's supposed to go out. So it should be, I would think, you know, end of March.
That would be great. Yeah, we actually had a listener write in, left a comment saying, Anna saying, I was so annoyed to learn that the DNA testing had been delayed again. So I'm assuming that's what this person's talking about.
Yeah.
Was it being pushed back? But that's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. And then Jody's case is, like we told you, I kind of pulled back on it because I had been talking to the Conviction Integrity Unit at the Attorney General's office, sent them a bunch of information. Again, that's a kind of a one-way communication. They're not allowed to tell me what's going on. The only assurance that I got from them was this is the way it was put to me was this is not a case that's just sitting on our desk. We are actively working on this case right now. And that's why, like I said, we hit the stage in the investigation where I was going to go out and start, you know, interviewing people and start working on the new investigation. And after talking to the AG's office at the CIU, it was made clear that I shouldn't be out there doing that right now because they're actively investigating. Still don't know exactly where they're at on everything, but what I do know is that Jody was paid a visit at the prison over the last week. by the investigators at the Conviction Integrity Unit.
Oh, that's so great to hear.
Yeah. And I believe it was not just the, I think it was the actual attorney that's working on the case and the investigators. So like that's really good. So the, we can infer a lot of things from that, but you know, their job is to find convictions that are not just and get them overturned. And I think a lot of them that they review, you know, they review them, realize there's nothing there and they move on. The fact that, you know, they've in my conversations with them, they're actively investigating the case. It's been, gosh, going on over two months now since I've last spoken to them. So you kind of worry, like, are they really doing anything right now?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that just, you know, lip service to kind of, you know, get me off their back or whatever? But hearing that they went to the prison tells me a couple of things. One, yes, they are absolutely actively working on the case. And two, tells me they believe that they wouldn't be there talking to Jody unless they thought there was merit there.
Yeah, it's great to hear that they're not sitting on their hands, because we all know how that works.
Yeah. So I was super excited to hear about that. I heard from Jody, and then our listener, Teresa, who visits Jody pretty regularly, had got that message for Jody to pass on, mm-hmm. as well. Yeah, it sounds good. And Jody is super excited, but feeling that same kind of feeling that, you know, everybody we work with has, where it's like, hope starts to creep in, and hope can be a dangerous and a scary thing.
Mm-hmm. No, it really, I mean, especially in Jody's case, I mean, it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and they want to get out. The same thing with Ed, you know, I mean, Ed had been promised lots of things, and then
right.
You came along and gave him hope, but he was scared of it.
Right.
And I think that's what we're seeing with Jody right now as well.
Yeah. So hopefully I'm really hoping that we're going to have major news in Jody's case very soon. I do know that, you know, I'd said a while ago, people were talking about, well, this was already litigated, and so you can't, you know, that's not ineffective assistance counsel because somebody already argued this or that. And what I had said a while ago, and I want everybody to keep in mind, is this is a different situation. This isn't a defense trying to come up with an argument that's going to be countered by the prosecution. This is the prosecution. It's the state side coming in and saying, this conviction needs to be overturned. And there is nobody to fight against that, right? So there's not another side.
Mm-hmm.
It's just them coming out as the prosecutors if they decide that that's what they're going to do to overturn the conviction. And they only work on actual innocence, wrongful convictions. So it seems, again, this is not, I want to make very clear, this is not a statement from them. This is just my inference from what I see happening. It seems like they feel like there is some merit to the idea, at the very least, that Jody is innocent, where they've taken the steps to. I know they've been actively investigating now for about 9 months, since we started the season, and they've moved forward to actually going out and interviewing Jody about it. So
I think that's a big step.
Yeah.
And it's a step in the right direction. At least we know that they're doing something.
Yep. So we'll definitely keep you guys updated on that. But I don't know. I feel like 2025, I just feel in my bones that 2025, Jody's coming home. That's going to be freaking awesome.
That's great. And that's great news to be on your birthday week. So for those that don't know, we just passed Bob's birthday. So happy birthday, Bob. Yeah.
Thanks for not wishing me happy birthday, guys. You missed it. Now it's too late.
Oh, goodness.
Erica tried to fatten me up for my birthday.
Of course she did.
She tricked me. So
I don't know that she tricked you, but you're going to say she did.
Well, she did trick me. She'll be proud of tricking me, I'm sure. So she was here. I wasn't going to see her that day, mm-hmm. on my birthday, because I was working school. She was working here, and she was going to be leaving before I got here. But she was texting me, and she's like, what spilled in the fridge in the office? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't think there's anything in there. She's like, it's gross. I tried to clean it up. It's like sticky. I'm like, what is in there? She's like, I have no idea, but you need to get this cleaned up when you get back.
I liked it. She's like, you need to get this cleaned up.
Yeah. So I came home and opened the fridge, and there in the fridge was a box of crumble cookies.
Well done, Erica.
Yeah. She put a nice little note to me on there, and then I proceeded to eat all those cookies.
Well done. I mean, that's better than I just brought my family to your house for your birthday. Like,
and brought me cookies. Yeah.
Well, I didn't. She did.
Yeah.
My wife
brought me cookies.
And then I ate them.
Oh, yeah. It's been so. It was rough. I had my giant donuts for my birthday.
Amazing.
Yeah, which were amazing. And then Michelle brought cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And then at school, one of my students, which was really sweet, baked me brownies and brought me in brownies. And then the school the principal secretary, which if anybody's ever worked in the school, you know, she's the one that actually runs the school.
Uh-huh.
She put cookies on my desk when I was out of my room. So I had cookies and then I got home and had crumble cookies.
It sounds like it's a good thing that First Form is sponsoring the podcast.
Yeah, I need it now. I gained 27 pounds for happy
one
birthday.
Weekend.
Happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Bob.
Thank you. And we didn't mention, Zach did mention that we're without Janet today. She's on assignment. So we scheduled this early recording this week. Cause you know, we kind of like doing it earlier and Janet was coming back from, Sketchfest in San Francisco. Sounds like if I'm understanding anything right, the good news is that it started to rain in California and the wildfires are under control. The bad news is that because the hillside's all burned up and now it's raining, there's mudslides all over the place. And a lot of the roads that I think the roads were shut down between San Francisco and LA. So she couldn't get home yesterday. So she's
that's tough,
but they're open up now. She's on her way home.
Good.
And she also caught the Sketchfest bug just like last year.
Of course.
Yeah. She's also sick.
I feel like it's hard not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We miss you, Janet.
Yep.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So, all right, with that, we'll get into this week's episode. This came to me. I went and checked the P.O. box, shockingly, and it was just a card that she had sent that was just, hey, just want to tell you about our, you know, our program and what we do. We get, mm-hmm. A lot of mail. People send stuff in, and I was, like, reading through. I'm like, I had never thought about, one, like, people giving birth in prison
mm-hmm.
and helping to, like, be there and support family members of people who are in prison. It just fascinated me. So I thought, reach out and talk to her.
No, as I said in the intro, I mean, it was a fascinating conversation and I had no clue that that was even something that was offered or would need to be. Like you said, you don't think about that. You don't think about the idea of these people going to prison that are pregnant and having to give birth in prison.
Yeah.
With very little help.
And the numbers shocked me.
Yeah. When she said 25 in that one prison alone.
Yeah. In a year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, never ever would occur to me that I thought there'd be something that was like very, very rare, but apparently it happens all the time.
I wonder what like the national average is, like if that's pretty close to the national average.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's definitely, if just in Minnesota that's the case, then I'm sure that plenty of other states, you know, need the same help.
No, it was a great interview, and it was really nice to hear that not only are they supporting the people having the children that are giving birth, but the families and helping with parenting classes and just, there's so many little support groups that they have made that it's really, really nice to see.
Yeah. And with that, we'll get into some, we don't have a lot of questions. And also, truth be told, both Zach and I were thinking Janet was putting together her outline and we both at the last minute realized that of course she's not here. So we just threw together a few, Zach threw together a few of the posts from Facebook. So we'll go through those. Probably gonna be a short episode today because we don't have a whole lot of questions from everybody, but let's get into what we got.
So this first one's from Nicole. She says, great interview. I enjoyed learning about criminal justice related topic that isn't often talked about. I think Raylene and her group are doing great work providing support through pregnancy, childbirth, and beyond. Forming and maintaining family bonds seems like it should be an important part of the system's purported aimed at rehabilitation.
Yeah, I mean, not a question there, but yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know what else to say about this other than it's just fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that maybe through us doing the podcast about it and some of the other work they're doing, that they get a little more exposure and there are other states that pick up on this. Because I thought it was the idea of support for the families on the outside, I think is a huge one too. I remember talking to Ed, when Kim and Kyra and Zach started going into the prison to visit him when they hadn't in a long time. Like, that's such an awkward interaction. It's scary. Like, if you've ever been to a prison, it's not, you don't just waltz in, you're going through metal detectors. You have all these rules you got to follow, all this stuff. Like, to have somebody there to support them is just, I just can't say enough good things about them.
So again, this is another one from a listener, not a question, but Erica says that there is a show called Inside the World's Toughest Prisons. It's hosted by Raphael Rowe, a British man who was wrongly incarcerated for 12 years for a murder he did not commit. It's fascinating insight into the world's prison systems. So it sounds like something we should check out. She did leave a link as well on the fan page, but it could be an interesting thing to check out.
Yeah, any of those shows or documentaries you can find about how life is like in prison, I think it's just good to educate people and just open up people's minds to what those conditions are, especially from our community, who, we're aware of the fact that, number one, not everybody in there is guilty, and realize that even the people that are, that they are people. Like, we need to do better. And I think it's a big step with what Raylene is doing, is even if people did something wrong and they're in prison, still treating them like a human being.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And she talked about that a little bit, just like the different countries. And Haley brings that up about the travels to Norway and finding out how other countries handle the situation. And she wonders if it's realistic to implement some of those policies and strategies in the United States.
I certainly would hope so, because we bring up Norway a lot over the years because of the way their prison systems work. But just to have a prison system that is focused on rehabilitation as opposed to punishment would be incredible. And also, I just need to say this out loud while we're doing this episode. If there's ever an episode, we need Janet. I'm sitting here finding myself thinking of, like, Janet would have so much to say about this. And she's not here. And we're sitting here stumbling through this. So Janet, feel better next week. And we're going to talk about this more.
So is it only Norway that has some of these policies, or are there other European countries that have some of these more?
I think there are, a lot of countries do things differently than we do. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to say even like in the UK, like a life sentence is still like 20 years. Like, yeah. I could be wrong about that, but Norway is kind of like, from my research, and this was years ago, was kind of like the gold standard of, the fact that they don't have, I don't think they have any sentences over 20 years, even for murder. And they're really focused on rehabilitation. Their sentences are shorter. They give people another chance. The fact that they do that, and their recidivism rate is really low. It's lower than we have, which like should be an eye opener to people to say, like, that works. Like, we take our, I've always said, after I've learned what things are really like in prison, like, it's really difficult. If you go into prison, not a monster, it's hard to walk out of it, still not a monster. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because, we hear from people over and over and over again. We've heard it with, Jody's had their struggles over and over again. Of course, Jody being trans makes it even more difficult for them. But like Jesse Eldridge in season 3, that, by the way, I know we talked about this, but just while we're talking about things that are going well, we got DNA testing happening in Jesse's case right now. Things are looking really good there. We've got some more exciting news coming about Jesse's case, I think, pretty soon. So that's looking on the up and up. But remember way back then talking to Jesse, and Jesse was like, it's so hard to stay out of trouble. Jesse went to prison and was like, well, I just want to mind my own business. But like, these gangs set up, right? And there's like the white supremacist gang, which Jesse would have nothing to do with. And then there's the black gang and the Mexican gang. And there's all the, like, and if you don't affiliate with one of them and you're on your own, then you're like in constant danger. You constantly have to defend yourself and fight. Like, we shouldn't have a system that works like that. Like, whether you did something wrong or you were wrongfully convicted, either way, we should have a prison system where somebody can go in and serve their time, be treated like a human, and get out, not be afraid for their lives every second that they're in there.
What do you think it is that snowballed the U.S. into this prison system in this case of punishment like this?
I think that it's always kind of been that way. I think it was always looked at from all the way, back in the late 1700s, 1800s, even before that. I think it was always looked at as punishment. Mm-hmm. But then, later the privatization of our prison systems has made that even worse, because you have people that are running the prisons who are just trying to make a profit. They want as many people in there as they can get. They get paid for every person that's in the prison. And it just like starts to put in all of these layers of separation between the inmate and the people that are responsible for making the decisions. And I think it's just snowballed, and it was easy to do and continues to be easy to do because people in society generally don't look at the people that are in prison as humans. They look at them as their animals. And like I've said many times before, I used to feel that way before I was really educated in what's going on inside of our prisons and really started looking at the humanitarian aspects of all this. I was looking like, people are like, well, it's miserable in there. And it was kind of like, for me, it was like, good, well, fuck them.
Yeah.
They broke the law. They got to do their time. So I think there's a lot of that. I think that attitude, obviously that attitude has changed for me over the years. But I think that attitude is what has allowed this. So you have, a system that is driven by money and not about people. You've got too many layers of separation between the decision makers and the inmates, where they really don't even see them as people anymore. And then they're allowed to get away with it because society in general doesn't give a shit about the people that are in prison. They just look at them as they're bad people and they don't care.
Yeah. And I used to fall where you fell, where you were like, oh, those are bad people in prison. They deserve what they got. And I think a big thing that changed for me is when you start putting together, and it's not just this, everybody has the human rights and should be taken care of. But in my head, when you're thinking of prison, I'm thinking of murderers and all these really atrocious things.
Right.
And then you have people going there for white collar crimes that are in there with these same people, and you kind of forget about them, and you forget about this whole, the whole idea that these people are people.
Well, and even look at like the cycle that we have, like say like in inner cities where you have lower socioeconomic areas where people get caught in this cycle. So like how many people are in there for probation violations and for minor drug offenses or for even burglary or robbery because, they can't afford to live. They come out and they can't get a job and they get sucked back into this cycle. You know, these are not bad people. They're just stuck in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
All those people exist. You know, as long as we have time and we're kind of on the topic, I was literally just today was having a conversation with somebody that kind of leads back into the way that where that question was posed by you. You know, where does this come from? A lot of what is happening in our criminal justice system to me has a lot to do with racism, and it's not as on the nose. So the conversation I was having with this person was they were talking about, it came out with somebody about getting a job, and they're like, well, maybe they don't do drug tests anymore. And I was saying, well, nobody really does drug tests anymore, at least not for marijuana. The person we were talking about smokes marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, he's like, well, that's not true. They do that. And it just led us into this conversation about why smoking, I think it's so weird now that smoking marijuana, even though it's legalized in so many states, is still stigmatized, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're a bad person if you smoke weed, but drinking alcohol is almost glorified.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, if you look at there's no arguing the science about it at all. Alcohol is far, far more dangerous than marijuana.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I agree.
The effects it has on your body, the effects it has on you when you're driving, your decision-making skills, all that stuff is way, way more dangerous and way more harmful than marijuana. But when your kid turns 21, you can't wait to take him out to the bar and have your first beer with him, right? Alcohol is the thing that, I don't drink much anymore. For some reason, I have to answer questions about that anytime I go out with anybody, not with you guys, but with other people.
Yeah.
If you're like, I don't want to drink, well, why aren't you drinking?
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird thing, right?
Well, it's a social lubricant.
Right. But if when your kid turns 21, nobody wants to go, smoke the first joint with them.
Yeah.
And that conversation, it seems like I'm rambling. I am a bit, but it's coming back to where I'm going from. I feel like, and I know there's been a lot of studies about this, and a lot of people feel the same way, that the marijuana laws, I think, come back to racism. If you go way back, it was primarily the black community were the ones that were smoking marijuana from, what I've read, and who knows how verifiable these studies are. But those marijuana laws were it was a way to lock up people of color. At the time, that wasn't a popular drug with the white people, but in the black communities, that was a very popular drug. And so, that became the thing. And it worked so well. This person that I was having this conversation with, like, they finally backed off it during the exchange where, like, they're like, I've never really thought about it like that, but they were arguing tooth and nail. It's like, no, dude, smoking pot. Like, I don't want my kids smoking pot. I'm like, but you're fine with them drinking alcohol. Yeah. Well, that's not as big of a deal. I'm like, it's a way bigger. It's way, way worse.
Yeah.
Than the dude. Like, if I had the choice, obviously in a perfect world, nobody's doing any illicit substance, you know, doing right. any mind altering substances whatsoever. That would be great. But if I had the choice, if you're like, do you want your kid to be a drinker or to smoke pot? I'll take pot any day of the week.
Yeah.
You know?
And you talk about that. I don't think it's, I still think it's villainized to a certain aspect, but I know like here in Michigan where we live, it's legal and you're definitely seeing more and more people outside of the norm talking about it
yeah.
and partaking in it. Being the fact that I tattoo for a living and I sit and talk to people all day, every day.
Yeah.
I have all walks of life that come in and talk about it. People that in higher positions that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
That partake in it.
Well, so. Yeah. So the culture's changing now. Because of the legalization of it. That's why I was kind of like taken aback by the conversation that he was still so, you know, so down on anybody that smoked, you know, they're potheads or whatever. I'm like, dude, like I guarantee you there's 20 people in your office right now.
Yeah.
That
oh, 100%.
That take gummies or smoke or hit a vape pen or whatever regularly.
Yeah.
Now, like there's still, especially, you know, he works in a corporate environment and, you know, it's like, no, things have to stay the same way. But the only reason it relates to this is the kind of that tough on crime type of aspect, you know, how our prisons got to be the way they are. I think that's another reason. And you know, that alone, the laws regarding marijuana use, I think they've shaped the course of history. You know, like I know from when I used to work and teach up kids in Benton Harbor and I worked at the juvenile detention center and had students. And it was like a revolving door of students going in and out. And it was always marijuana charges. You know, they would get popped with pot. You know, the cops would pull up to them, shake them down, find a baggie of weed on them, lock them up. Now they're on probation. They go back and then they're following around again. They're around somebody that has, and it's like, they just keep, it's like that silly little plant kept them stuck in that system over and over and over again, whether they were using it or not using it, whether they were around it, because it was everywhere in Benton Harbor back then. You know, that was, you know, 20 years ago. Now, again, it's a little different because it's legal, but, how did I'm just positing the idea of, I wonder how much that shaped those communities today, way back then when that drug was used as was used to trap people into the system.
Man, I never once thought about it like that. And that's a really interesting concept to think of. Mm-hmm. So since we're on this topic, and we were talking about Norway and their prison systems. Like, what would it take for our policies to change? I mean, it seems like some huge hurdles here in the United States to change these policies, but it's something that could be done.
It could be. It would have to come from the top on down. I think that, and I'm not in any way intending to get political, and I'm not even having this conversation with anybody, but I don't think with the layout of power we have right now, that's going to happen in the next couple of years anyway, if not the next 4 years, just because that's like we're back to a tough on crime party in power that are going to be pushing against those things. But that's what it takes, is electing the right people who care. But the other part of it is, like, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, the people that you think so great, I promise you, are getting their pockets lined by special interests, including private prisons and everywhere, all over. Like, there's a reason why we still keep talking about things over and over again, and why nothing ever actually seems to get fixed, because nobody actually wants them fixed, because they all want their pockets getting lined. But it could happen. It would take us, the people, like, rising up and doing something about it and putting the right people in office and holding our politicians accountable on both sides of the aisle for that to happen.
Well, I know you've said that before. You talk about local elections, and you said you need to beware of people that run on a tough on crime platform.
You should be suspect of that.
Yeah.
Any like county sheriff, district attorney that's running on a tough on crime, even your governors, you know, when your governors are running and they're running on the, I'm a tough on crime person, I would be real skeptical. But I'm not saying that means you can't vote for that person. Everybody needs to do a lot of research and everybody makes their own decisions. But that, to me, that's always a red flag. Like, what do you mean by that? I want to look into your history. I want to see them asking questions. What does that mean to you? Because it doesn't mean the same thing to everyone, but that's always a concern for me. Because what I just want is justice. There's a tough balance between keeping the streets safe.
Correct.
Keeping violent criminals off the street And then also like building a community up. And I feel like that tough on crime mindset is never designed to build a community up.
Right. And I think that's where that rehabilitation comes from, right? Like you're taking these violent offenders and you're trying to not just lock them away for the rest of their years, but trying to rehabilitate them so they can go out into society and be productive,
right,
and raise the whole community up. And you do see people that have done that,
yeah,
but it hasn't come out in the numbers that we need.
Well, there's a prevention side of it too, that I think gets missed all the time. That's one of the things when we went to Benton Harbor, when I was talking to the people, the community, and they said, like, we don't have any community with our law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
We don't trust them. We don't talk to them. I think there's, on the front end, if police departments can start like building community relationships wherever they're at, and they can help prevent some of this stuff from happening on the front end by kind of bridging that gap a little bit. So that, to me, like, that's the perfect world that I want to live in. I want to live in a world where I have a police department that has a presence, where people feel safe because they're there, but they're not afraid of the police because the police, that, you know, they have a relationship with them. They get to know them, and they spend their time around the communities. Of course, we live in small towns, so it's, you know, that makes a little more sense for us. But whatever your precinct is, that if the police are on the streets and getting to know people and building that community trust, I think that goes a long way. It also goes a long way when something bad does happen and people have that trust with the police and they're willing to talk to them and help them find the violent people and get them off the street.
You talk about that. We talked about Benton Harbor and our whole last season about Benton Harbor, but that's exactly it. I mean, those people, the police show up, they don't want to talk.
Right. They don't trust them.
They don't trust them at all. They feel like they're more in danger with the police than they are by protecting themselves and keeping quiet.
Right.
And that's something that just cannot happen. And there's so many other communities that's not the case. And is it racism? Is it socioeconomic? I don't know what it is. It's a little bit of everything.
Probably yes.
Probably yes.
East of both, yeah.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So I do have an off-topic question from Monica, and it says, any chance of getting Susan Simpson on again for any updates on the proof cases or a new season?
Probably. I'll have to reach out to Susan.
I did hear something about Undisclosed, that they're going to drop Colin's bombshell.
Yeah, I think I missed that. I just saw a post about it, but I believe Rabia announced when Undisclosed is coming back, but I thought I saw it wasn't going to be until next January.
I don't know. I didn't see the post. I just saw there was people clamoring because they're finally going to drop Colin's bombshell.
Yeah. So, and I think that was part of the announcement, that when they relaunch Undisclosed, that Colin's bombshell we've all been waiting for years is finally going to get released. So that's exciting.
That is exciting. This next one's from Olivia. It says, I've listened to a bit of the appeals discussion Bob Mata has had regarding Delphi, and I find it interesting how different the process is in every state. I work in the appellate court in California, and our processes and rules are much different. It is going to be very interesting to see what happens with the appeal, and I hope everyone involved gets the justice they deserve.
Yeah, and they're talking about the Delphi case.
Yes.
On that note, so in my little outline I had put that'll be the last question, but then you wrote your own outline also.
Oops.
Yeah, no, that's fine, but I'll tell you guys now. Talk to Bob. I've started reading through and listening through some of the stuff, the new things that have come out in Richard Allen's appeal. Particularly, there's quite a bit of evidence that was suppressed that the judge wouldn't allow to come in, and they're sharing what some of that evidence is. I got to know. I got to talk about it. So next Monday, for you patrons, next Monday, I think we're doing it at 6 p.m., 7 p.m. Eastern time. Patrons will be able to watch live. But I got Bob coming on to talk about all the new updates in the Delphi case. But that episode will air not this coming Sunday, but the following Sunday.
Okay. I'm excited to hear that. I might actually try to tune in for that one because I really want to hear what Bob's got going on.
Yeah,
that.
And we'll talk some about the process stuff and what needs to happen or what, you know, how things work in Indiana compared to other states too in that conversation.
Okay, so the last thing we have on the docket today is really just a statement. It's not a question. It comes from Laura, and she's kind of going through this process herself. It says, when I was 10, my father was convicted of a white collar crime, tax evasion, and sent to a maximum security prison where he was sentenced to 2 years but served under 9 months, if I recall correctly. His trial was televised on the local news, and I live in a very small, privileged town, so it was socially impactful. Fortunately, I was financially secure, and my parents had been long divorced, so my day-to-day was not rocked, but there was literally no support for my mom, my brother, or I. It was confusing, intimidating, and just sad. I recall the process of just getting into the prison to see him more than any conversation I had with my family. I set off metal detectors with my zipper on my shirt. Both my mom and I were terrified. They pulled us aside, had to do a mild body check. We weren't pariahs in our town, but it was definitely felt like being on a boat in the middle of the ocean with nothing to grab onto. I came out unscathed, but my brother, for reasons including and beyond this, always struggled, even now 39 years later. I cannot imagine the centering, calming, and ease it would have brought to us if one single understanding face and voice in that chaos. So sending the hugest gratitude to anyone working in this field, his sentence was his to bear, not his 10 and 12-year-old children.
I think that's a great story to kind of point out how the work that Raylene does and her organization does to affect real people's lives. And it's exactly what we were talking about earlier, like having someone there, because if you guys remember from the episode, that was part of what they do is like to be there, when the family members go to visit their loved one in prison, just to be there in the room with them and guide them through the process. Because I'm telling you, it's right. When you walk into a prison like that, even like when I went to go visit Ed for the first time, it's the first time I ever went to a prison to talk to someone, to visit someone. I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know what the procedures were. I didn't know what I needed to do next. I didn't know where I was going to go. I was terrified that, you know, it's just super nerve wracking. So even just for me as just, you know, an adult going in to talk to another adult, if I had somebody that could walk me through it and go with me and be like, okay, this is how this works and this is how this works and you're going to have to do this. But for like kids going to visit their parent or something like that, I think it's huge. So all the love in the world out to Raylene and her organization. We thank you for the work that you're doing and hope you're able to expand on that. And again, you know, we put her in the main episode. We had a link to their organization if you're able to donate to help them or volunteer to work with them. If any of that live in Minnesota or wherever else were they? Alabama, I think was the other place they were.
Yeah. And they just opened a federal one as well, a federal division.
Yeah. Please help them out if you can do that. So with that being said, we're going to wrap this thing up. This Sunday, guys, we have a very special guest. I reached out to this person because I was, you know, I'm on the hunt for anyone that is doing really good work in the space that is trying to make a difference and an impact in the world. And that led me to a podcast called Rainbow Crimes. And so I reached out there to their host, CJ, who hosts the podcast. They've been doing it for 5 years, and she covers all cases that are that involve people. And please forgive me if I get that, because I always get these acronyms wrong. The LGBTQAI+.
That sounds right.
I think so.
It's close.
But people in that community, whether they are victims or perpetrators. That's CJ's entire focus of the entire podcast. And she has even started her own podcast network where she does several other shows like that. So I had a great conversation with CJ. That's going to come up this Sunday. And then for our patrons on Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern time, you can tune in and watch live as I talk to Bob Mata about the developments in the Delphi case. That episode will air next Sunday. And for next week's follow-up, we hopefully will have Janet back to help us knuckleheads stumble through this thing. With that being said, that's it. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.